Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session. Steve and I are together in the Cleveland studio. And normally I would throw to you with a how are you doing, but I can tell you I'm not doing great because yesterday we learned of the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and I was all over social media last night, which probably wasn't the mentally healthiest thing for me to do. I've always respected Justice Ginsburg. She's obviously, you know, one of the strongest voices from the left on the court, certainly in our lifetimes. And she was one tough lady, man. She went through a bunch of battles with cancer and dealt with a lot of shit growing up, the time she did to accomplish what she did. And I'm concerned for the country, but I'm also just sad to see a legend leave us. I mean, I was shocked. I don't know why I was shocked. She was 87 years old and had multiple
bouts of cancer.
Right. But when that hit me, man, it hit me like a bucket of water to the face.
Right. I mean, this is... it's tough, and just, I think as a person, like when you, I spend a lot of time reading Supreme Court decisions.
I'm aware.
Obviously less now because I don't deal with much constitutional law in my line of work. Now it's just for, just to stay kind of abreast of what's going on, for our show and just right. In general.
And that's what climate change is to me, that is to you.
It's right. I mean, now, I think it's just important, like anyone who has, gone into the legal field, it's important that you stay abreast of constitutional issues. I feel sure. Like it's just, part of your professional responsibility. But, when you read the work of a person, so many times and, covering different things and, just you kind of create their voice in your head, And so for all the justices that I've read, whether it was even Scalia, right? I rarely agree with Scalia, and Thomas doesn't rate much, but I've turned a little bit of a corner even on Justice Thomas, the more I've dug into his decisions and kind of looked at them and looked at his past and kind of how he got to where he is. I'm still not a fan of him. I disagree with him on a number of things, but I do have respect for how he got to where he is and why he thinks the way that he does. And the same with, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She just, I respect everything about how she got to this point. Or got to the, ultimate end point of her life, but just the overall impact that she had on the Supreme Court as a woman, but never letting that, while she embraced her femininity, it was never the driving force, right? Her driving force was what's right, what's just, and it just so happened that more often than not, then, it led to the support of whether it's various arguments in civil rights or for women's rights and, doing what she felt needed to be done to kind of protect those who needed protecting and those who needed help and those who needed support, and doing it within the framework of the law in the highest court on the land. And she did it time and time again and was incredibly consistent. And then if we want to argue about the constitutionality and decisions made, that's a discussion for a different day. But she was an incredible woman, and I do feel blessed in the profession that I've chosen because it does give me access to these people in a way. And everyone has access to them. I mean, anyone can read us, but I mean, like you
took classes in constitutional law.
I mean, where it was
appreciated probably more than someone like me.
Right. I mean, it was just like a part of my curriculum for 3 years. Right. Like where that. I mean, that's what you were reading constantly.
You're gonna know more about that than me. Try me on thermodynamics, bitch. I'll light you up.
Right. What's so funny? I actually used that thermodynamic comparison with someone the other day. I asked him, actually, he said, do you even know what thermodynamics is? And the kid was like, I actually have never heard of that. I have no idea what it is. Like, yeah, shut the fuck up. Now, if he would have said yes, I don't know what my plan was, but it felt good at the time. So, you know, I took that from you.
You're gonna tag me.
Right. No, I just like, I would like, hold on, let me, hey, can you explain thermodynamics to me real quick?
Real quick, yes.
For dummies. But, you know, with RBG, you know, the tough part now, you know, and by the time people hear this, you know, I think the conversation can comfortably kind of go into what happens with the Supreme Court. So right. The reality is that there's not a lot of time to mourn her. It's just like, okay, so what happens? Now, I'm going to say this, and it may come across as crass or whatever, but I'm going to say it because I've been saying it since 2015 when we started the show, and that is, elections have consequences, and the Democrats have done a really bad job at it, at winning elections since before 2016, right? And the reason why I say that is because people are up in arms right now because Donald Trump will have the ability to pick his third member of the Supreme Court. And just understand this, you can't stop it, right? Like, the only way you can stop it, you have to rely on four Republican senators to not vote, right?
With 100% Democratic unity, which
you might not have, right? Like, so you left yourself open to this position. People talked about, oh, the blue wave in 2018, right? There was the big blue wave came, Jim. I don't know if you noticed. Well, I didn't fucking notice. Because that blue wave didn't do shit. Yeah, you got AOC in Congress, well, and you got, okay. But you needed to win more seats in the Senate,
yes,
right, to be able to stop shit like this. And you didn't do it, right? So you can take your moral victory. You can say, well, we got three. We got four. It's less. And now all we need is these four people. Like, right? So now you've left yourself in a position where you have to rely on four people that are not in your party, right, who've all they pledged is said, well, we won't pass a vote before the election.
Not before transition of power.
I mean, like, so you've put yourself as Democrats, you've put yourself in this situation, right? And I just have little sympathy for the DNC as a national organization, as for Democrats as a whole, because of the way they've approached the last, I don't know, 6 years. Because part of your problem, why you're here in the first place, and why you couldn't get a Merrick Garland in, is while, you know, you had Obama in the White House, you didn't do what you needed to do at the midterms with him either.
Right.
Right? And then that's what allowed Mitch McConnell to be in a position to say, no, we're not having a vote on Merrick Garland. Right? And then in 2018, you didn't do what you needed to do. So now, guess what? Mitch McConnell is still in the same position to be able to control the situation and say, you know what? Now we are going to have a vote. And you can't stop it.
Right. Now, he's... All right, first of all, Mitch McConnell's an utter fucking hypocrite. Mm-mm. Not new. Yes, he is. Mm-mm. Oh, my God. For saying we can't... We need to respect the will of the American people to the Merrick Garland vote or non-vote, but now say, I'm going to get a vote in front of the Senate for... All right. It's his right to do it. It's legal. It's whatever. But don't tell me he's not a fucking hypocrite.
See, here's the deal. He's the one who gets to dictate it, right?
So he can still be a hypocrite.
Right? I mean, I guess.
What do you guess?
I get. Yeah, sure. Fine.
I stand on this principle that, well, now it works better for me, so fuck it.
Right.
That's hypocrisy.
Be mad. Guess what? You can't do. Not a goddamn thing about it.
Okay. Absolutely true.
Okay, I mean, but here's the thing.
But I can call him hypocrite, and I'm 100% right, and I don't know how you could.
Congratulations.
I'm not looking for a medal. My
point is, people want to rant and rave at Mitch McConnell all they want, and you can do it, but that isn't going to solve your problem.
I didn't say it was. Right? I'm making a truthful statement.
And like, listen, and his justification for it is simple, right? Like, if you didn't want this to happen, then you should have showed up at the polls. Right. You know what I mean?
I think we're having two different arguments here.
No, we're not having two different arguments. I mean, like, yeah, he's a hypocrite. Okay. Yes, he's totally a hypocrite.
Okay.
He totally is. And you know what? This motherfucker is sitting behind his desk right now, jerking off with his fucking turtle face like, hypocrite, these nuts. Right? And again, the reason why I am okay with him, because if I were in his position, I would do the exact same fucking thing.
That's fair. That's fair. Right?
So you either need to change the rule. You need to, one, you have to get him out. Then you have to figure out a way to change the rules. Now, also, who changed the rules?
Oh, that's the Democrats back when they made it a 50, it made it a simple majority rather than a super majority vote. It used to require 60 senators to approve a Supreme Court justice. Was it Daschle?
Yeah, Tom Daschle. And there was somebody else. There was somebody else whose name, man, I want to say it was Chuck Schumer, but it might not have been. But I think it was Chuck Schumer.
All right, well, I'll give you a pass. If you're wrong about Chuck Schumer, you've expressed your opinion on him enough that... But, all right, let me ask a question.
First of all, Chuck Schumer reminds me of Count Chocula, for whatever reason.
Well, that's relevant. I'm a jerk for calling him.
He just does. I don't know. Right. Like every time I see him, he reminds me of Count Chocula.
All right, I think that relates more to your desire to eat
sugar. I'm a Cocoa Puff guy.
My apologies. The question I have for you, though, because I'm talking totally about just decorum and decency. I put on Facebook that McConnell, of course, will not follow his thing. And actually, a guy named I won't say his last name because I've never spoken to him in person. Hardcore conservative said, McConnell will honor that, and said, do you want to bet? I said, depends on the stakes. And like 10 seconds later, McConnell's how about 10K? And then a link to McConnell's statement of, I'm going to force this through. Now, I'm going to say this, and again, talking purely about decorum, not what's right, what's legal, what's whatever. Announcing that the day her death came out, I thought was very, very, very low class.
Okay, that's...
Wait till fucking Monday.
Okay.
This doesn't mean me anything. I get it, but I just... Right. That really struck me.
Because my phone blew up as soon as it happened. Like, obviously, I got the notifications, but, you know, people, my friends, sure, whether they're other attorneys or people, political, whatever, and they're getting all upset, and my reply kind of to everybody was shoulder shrug, right? And because I had been beating the drum on, you can't take these moral victories, or this whole idea of, well, look what we did with AOC, and we got... You know, Presley, and we got Ilhan Omar. Okay, that's all good. You also needed, you know, an additional, you know, 6 seats in the Senate. And the reason why is this moment, this day, like, you know, 8:38 or 7:35, whenever that came through with what happened with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you needed to have more people in the Senate. Period. And you don't have them.
Look, I told you so it was fine, but...
And look, so now this whole thing... So now what are they saying? Oh, well, when we get in power, we're going to expand the Supreme Court. We're going to, like... Okay, well...
Also the wrong answer.
Right.
That answer is the same fucking problem as making it a simple majority. It was a short-term,
because here's the thing. Like, you guys aren't great at getting into power, and when you do, how long will you be there? And then once you're out, guess what? The other guy goes back into power, and then what do? If you, like, let's say you do it, and like, so Biden and Harris go in, and you've expanded the court, right, and you get through this whole thing, and you get a couple people in, but then you have a couple people go out, and conservatives end up, you're not doing it. You're not advancing your position at all. That's not helping the cause at all. It's frustrating because this is the moment that you needed to figure out how to be a winner, right? Like, you needed to figure out how to be a winner to prevent, and you didn't do it. Now, I had my fingers crossed, and I was hoping that she was going to be able to hold out, right, until November 5th, or she actually needed to probably hold out until like December 1st.
Right.
You know, in order, you know, assuming that's under the assumption that Trump would lost.
Right.
In order to...
Right. If he wins re-election, this is entirely a moot conversation. It's
entirely a moot point. But if, you know, in order for it to have a chance to have someone to replace her with someone of like mind, like, you needed her to be around for a long time. So you were putting your hopes of the Supreme Court on an 80-plus-year-old woman who had fought cancer multiple times, and now, you know, 4 Republican senators that you can trust about as far as you can physically throw me. And it's just like, look, this is what I didn't want to happen. I didn't want to end up in this position. And now we're here. So now the panic and the Mitch McConnell's a hypocrite. It's just like, we knew this.
Yes, we did.
We knew who Mitch McConnell was, you motherfuckers. And you were supposed to prevent this from happening and you didn't do it. Right. So now what the fuck do you want me to do? Right. Like, what do you want me to do?
Let me throw one possibility out there. Because I interact with a lot of people that you would call Bernie bros, and that's a fair assessment. And they're, until fairly recently, they were all, you know, I don't care. I mean, it was rigged, blah, blah, blah. And they would always say, give me one reason to vote for Trump, for Biden.
Supreme Court.
And I would, that was my answer. Like, mm-hmm. And well, now that's getting shoved in their face like a puppy that just shit the rug. And if I'm calling out the Bernie bros and the hardcore progressives who are not going to accept a centrist like Joe Biden. If you decide to stay at home and vote, absolutely you're right, fine. Don't fucking cry to me about Trump at all ever again if you do that. If you do not vote for Joe Biden, and I'm never that guy. I was the Gary Johnson guy until the last minute of 2016. I'm saying, Bernie bros, if you stay at home and pout through this election, go fuck yourselves twice.
Sorry. I mean, yeah, that's a legit, I guess that's a legit take. You know,
not the classiest take.
No, it's not the classiest. I mean, I think with, you know, the way I look at this, and, you know, I've actually talked to a couple of people who work for, you know, like national polling and data collection centers. And so the one question I ask is, you know, how do you kind of group your pissed off Bernie voters, right? And then do you feel that there will be enough sort of kind of new voters that maybe aren't necessarily new, but people who set out maybe the last couple elections for whatever reason, just because they felt that their vote wouldn't matter. You know, they were fine with Obama, or they just didn't like Hillary and they didn't want to vote for Trump. Like, do you feel that we'll get enough new people kind of re-injected into the voting system based off of the numbers that you're seeing, or do the pissed off Bernie crowd, do we really need them to see the numbers kind of impact Biden one way or another? And I didn't get a great answer, right? I talked to two different people that I trust that work for, you know, large national polling data collection. And their answers were sort of mixed. The one said that there's so many people that feel passionate about this one way or the other, not necessarily for Biden or Trump, that the number of new people that will be voting in this election that didn't vote in the last election, will absolutely trounce the pissed off Bernie crowd. Right. Right. Like, so to the point where their votes like wouldn't have impacted it. And then the answer that I got that I felt was better, kind of left things a little bit more gray, because the second answer was this is going to be a tight election, and it really is going to come down to locality on how the vote turns. Like, you know, the one thing that people didn't really are having a really tough time grasping is that, yes, Hillary did win the popular vote, right? But she won it, like, where? In New York and California, right? Like, so she won it, like, in these places that are highly Democratic. And so the question is, you know, it depends on where are the Bernie bros? Where are the people that are, you know, claiming that they're going to sit out? And those are the sort of things that matter, because depending on where they are, if they're in Pennsylvania, if they're in Wisconsin, if they're in Michigan, then yeah, they need to, like, you need to figure out a way, if you're the Biden camp, to get them on board no matter what, right? If they're in New York, if they're in California, where a lot of them are, then who the fuck cares?
Sure. Right, he wins New York by 70-30 rather than 66, 34. Who cares? I like to use this as a football analogy, and we'll be talking some football at the end of this, but when they use that whole, she won the popular vote, that's like saying, you know, the final score was 28-27, the other team. Well, we had more yards. Well, great.
Right.
But that doesn't determine how you win the fucking game.
Exactly. You know, and just another thing in terms of just general election talk you know, the Biden camp has a little bit of a problem, and it's a person of color problem. You know, the news came out that he's not tracking as well with Latino voters, and you're seeing movement in black voters towards Trump, and it's all relative, and I think the Latino problem is a legit problem that he needs to deal with, right? Because I think that people feel that, like, you know, given Trump's statements on immigration and just his statements in general and talking right. about
Mexicans are rapists right, and murderers,
that they're just automatically going to be against him. His response to Puerto Rico, which is why, you know, he's trying to get a stimulus package to Puerto Rico, you know, ASAP before this election. There's a lot of people who feel that you know, Biden has that wrapped up, and it's not true, and the data is starting to show it, right, that he doesn't have the Latino population wrapped up, and it's something that I've been saying for a long time, is that, you know, people, like, the I think the people that are doing this, a lot of these talking heads, and you have it wrong, right? Like Latinos are more conservative than anyone is going to say or openly admit, and you do have loud... You have voices, Latino voices, that are very progressive, right? But they don't speak for the entire group, and the group overall as a whole is a lot more progressive. And while they may not like Trump, they're going to lean more
conservative.
Right. They're a lot more conservative. They're leaning more toward that. Not a huge, massive majority, but you still have way more than I think the Biden camp should be comfortable with.
Well, and I think when you call the Latino vote a monolith, that's a tricky thing, because if you talk about where it counts, right? Florida is where it counts. And mm-hmm. the group
Florida and Texas.
Florida, Texas. In Texas, it's Mexican and other Central American Latinos. But in Florida, the Cuban population plays
and
a
Puerto
huge
Rico.
Role. And Puerto Rico. But Cuba is a very different mentality in terms of their trust of the American government and how mostly Democrats have handled Fidel Castro, who they hate
right.
because he's been awful to his own people, or was awful to his own people.
Mm-hmm.
To put them all in
you can't. You really can't.
And California really doesn't matter. Texas and Florida do. And yes. the fact that Texas is in play is interesting because...
But Texas is in play, and it's not because of the Latino vote. It's
no,
not.
No,
like, the Latinos in Texas are going to fucking vote for Trump.
Progressives have flocked to
right. I mean, and that's an argument that I have to have with people all the time, and I think I've had to have it with you. Like, Texas is in play, but the reason is because of the demographics that are moving there, and it's not because of the Latino population. Right?
Like,
most of them are going
that.
To vote like
right.
for Trump.
I don't know if most... Mexicans and other Latinos
in Texas
will vote for Trump. I don't know if I agree with that.
Okay. Well, when's the last time you've been?
To Texas?
Yes.
Long time.
Okay.
Well, that's actually not true. I was there. I was in George Bush International Airport a couple of years ago. But
I mean, like, listen, again, they're not a monolith group.
The Papados is probably not giving
right.
me a pulse.
I mean, they're not a monolith, and everyone's an individual, but that group's a hell of a lot more conservative than people think. And
largely for religious reasons. It's not.
I mean, yes, it's religion, but a part of it is they're no different than European immigrants early on, right? The thing with European immigrants, whether they were Italian or from Spain or any other country, what was the key? The key was assimilation.
Right.
Right? Like, you got to get over there, like, you got to work your ass off, but they wanted to assimilate. They wanted to blend in. Right. And so once they did that, then they were able to find a certain level of acceptance. Right. Of course, Cuomo talks about how his dad, Mario Cuomo, always would get really happy when Italians were referred to as white. Like, hey, we finally made it. Right. I mean, because for a while, Italians weren't considered white. They were
sure.
Italian. And, you know, the same thing with Irish people
and every
other group. Right.
Yep.
And every other group that has found success in this country has been able to assimilate. Right. And one of the biggest issues for black people, why we haven't assimilated well, is because you even with, you know, mixing race and everything else, you can't get away from the fact that you can look at a black person and tell for 80% of black people out there that they are black.
Right.
Right? Like, there's a small percentage that, okay, things get a little bit questionable, like, because of...
Is Derek Jeter black?
Right. Maybe. I mean, like, yeah. But, I mean, like, you know what I mean? Like, there are some where it's just like, all right, I don't know what they are, who, right. you know, whatever. But for the most part, like, you look at a black person, like, no one's looking at me and thinking that I'm a dark Italian. Right? This is just not how...
I just said Vin Diesel. That's the one that really...
Right. I mean, like, so, you, I mean, like, right. So... But the point is that that's one of the reasons why black people have had trouble sure. assimilating, right? Is because it was easy to target us and say, ah, no, doesn't matter what you do, you still are what you look like you right. are, right? Where over time, Europeans were able to blend in. Like, you marry, you change your name, right? Like, Italians did it forever. There's a local guy here, Tony Rizzo. His dad was known as Tony Reynolds.
Okay. Right, like, he changed his name. I was like, right, Rizzo's pretty ethnic.
Right, but he changed his name to Reynolds, sure. and then, you know, when Rizzo was coming up, you know, his dad, you know, he's like, Dad, should I change my name? And he's like, no, you don't need to, because there's a certain level of acceptance, and it's fine, you need to be proud of your Italian heritage, so on and so forth. And Rizzo's made a really good career for himself here locally, but that's one of the differences between the groups. Sure. And so the Latino population down in Texas and across the country really are of that same mindset. Right, like, we need to assimilate, you know, so, like, we're going to work hard, and we're going to blend in, we're not going to use Spanish, we're going to do, like, all these sort of things. And so, for them, it's a kind of key to their survival to blend in, and so they're trying to figure out, like, what do? So you vote for the Republicans, you vote for the conservatives.
Or do you say that and then do something different in the ballot box? We're not going to know that until
it happens. Well, true, maybe, but, I mean, I think they've been pretty, I mean, it's shown in the ballot box, because... If they were going the other way in mass, if they were saying one thing and doing something else in the ballot box, Texas would have been blue a long time ago.
Okay. We should move on, though, because there's been so much else going on.
Yeah.
And so we have sort of a Middle East... I'm very skeptical of the UAE-Israel peace agreement for a bunch of reasons.
Leave out Bahrain. Bahrain,
I'm sorry, Bahrain, too. You know what? My mind has completely changed. Now we're all good. Hey, Middle East, we're cool, right?
Yeah. Well, someone did that to me, and I was
Did you say fuck off?
No, I was just like, okay, cool. Can you point to a map and show me where Bahrain is?
Right.
And it's just like, well, that's not the point. I'm like, all right, well, can you point to a map and show me where the United Arab Emirates is?
I could do that. I could not find Bahrain.
So when I said that to this person, they said, what? United Arab Emirates? They're like, it's an airline. I'm like...
Oh, my God.
Like, one, this conversation's over. Two, I need you to look at a map. Three, you're actually not wrong, but you are wrong.
Actually, it's just Emirates is the airline, so not the United Arab Emirates. Oh, that's
right.
But it is, and I hear it's the most awesome airline ever, by the way.
I was looking at, there was a thing on Instagram, I looked at it. It'll be a while before I can afford to fly.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I have a friend who went to Dubai years ago, and she said that the accommodations were great. Now, they still kind of have that, you know, restrictive... lifestyle where
it's a Muslim country.
I made a crass remark to her on a text message, and she replied, please don't do that again. They monitor everything here. A couple was arrested for holding hands on the elevator the other day. Oh. Or holding hands or kissing. But I think they were married, and they got right. arrested for that public display. But that's beside the point. So Israel, UAE, and Bahrain, apologies, Bahrain, have come to a peace accord that has caused some stress in the Middle East amongst the anti-Israeli countries, the Irans and Saudi Arabia's...
Palestine. No, I mean, it's rumored that Saudi Arabia may join this, and I guess it's caused some issue in the, you know, royal family. But all in all, for the most part, this is a relatively good thing. You know, I mean, because Israel is not a Muslim country, right?
And, fair.
And
there's a statement that's going to be a non-controversial statement.
Well, here's this, and sorry. Just because not everybody is up on Israeli American foreign policy as it relates to Israel and why this matters, right? So the reason why it matters is that Israel is not a Muslim country. The UAE, Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, they are. And they typically, the Muslim countries, don't like Israel. For a long list of reasons, and you can
spend hours talking about the history of that.
I mean, I'm sure there's something on one of the channels right now that'll give you a brief history, right? Or just go Google it. But there's just a long history of discord, to say the least, between you know your Muslim countries and Israel. And so what this does is it helps to normalize relations because the countries will work together in things like healthcare and education and the sciences, and it kind of brings them together. And it's good if you can unify that region, you can hopefully stabilize it for the long term, which, you know, America has an interest in it because of oil, but also to protect Israel, which is our long-term partner. And we've got, you know, there's plenty of mixed relations about that.
History's got some challenges, but okay.
But all in all, from an American foreign policy standpoint, this is a relatively good thing. People feel that it may be, you know, this may look good on paper, but, you know, how will it actually play out? And we don't know, and you could say that about any deal.
True.
I'm just very skeptical
right now.
I think it's fine to be skeptical, but the reality is that the deal got done. If it works, it could be very beneficial to the region. The question is, what happens with Israel and Palestine? What does Palestine do in terms of its relationship with these other countries? And is this something that where these other countries can get in Palestine's ear and say, look, we got to figure something out, you know, and so everybody's got to come to the table. And I'm on record on this show and everywhere else saying, listen, I'm very, very empathetic to the Palestinian people and just the fight that goes on there. Sure. Between Israel and Palestine, it's brutal. You know, but we have to get to a point where they need to get to a point where it's a better situation. And I know that no one wants to be the one to bend the knee. And I don't want to be the one to tell anyone that you need to bend the knee as a Game of Thrones reference, but I just don't want to see what's going on over there continue. So I need somebody to be willing to go to the table and figure it out.
Let me say a couple things on that. I think that, first of all, my cynicism, be what it is, having a legal governmental agreement in place is always better than having nothing. I was super critical of Trump for pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal because we at least had an international agreement.
Agreed.
And when you walk away, you're just shitting on any attempt to do things diplomatically. So my skepticism aside, at least there's something that can be worked with where there is an agreement. And I can hope for the best. I mean, betting on things getting smooth in the Middle East has not been a winning,
I've pushed my
chips on that for a long time. But you know what? Without an attempt to make progress, then you're not going to get anywhere. So at least it's a step, whether it's the right step or a step that will lead to something, we don't know. But without an effort, you'll get nothing. So I will concede to that, and I will give Trump credit for being the president of the United States when this happened and for whatever role he played in it. This is definitely a way to say.
And you don't have to, I don't think there's reason to really go too deep into it. You know, the ink is still wet on the agreement.
Sure.
And so let's see how it goes. It's in place, so I think that's a good place to start. I don't think that there's a need. I know some people have gone to the, this is good, but, and have tried to, like, find room for criticism. I don't think we need criticism here. Like, there's, like, listen, because ultimately, we brokered the deal, right?
Right.
It's up to those countries, Bahrain, UAE, Israel, to get other people to the table and to figure this thing out. It's their region of the world.
Sure.
Right? Like, and so, yeah, oil, you know, cheap oil is good and great and all that other shit, but the reality is there's a shit ton of oil on this side of the world. Right, like, so they want to really go nuts.
We're pulling more out of the ground now than we ever have.
Right, like, so if they really want to get fucked up and go wild over there, okay, fine. We have our own access to oil. You know, I mean, like, Trump has opened up that well. So we don't necessarily need to be as dependent on you as we have been in the past. There's other places to go. So we, you know, like, don't look at us like we have to have you guys. We're just trying to help you out. Obviously, there's a financial benefit to us, but at the end of the day, it's your region, so you guys figure it the fuck out.
Although the reason that region got fucked up, in my opinion, was caused mostly by two countries that are England and the United States. The United Kingdom and the United States.
Right, the UK and the US.
We did more fuck with that area.
We've caused a lot of damage there. Now, listen, these are their countries, and they've done a lot to destroy each other and everything else before we got there, right? Like, it wasn't all us.
And after.
Right, before still. And after. But we didn't help. We definitely brought the Molotov cocktail to the party.
Right.
But You know, all right. So it's there.
But it's an important thing that's not getting a lot of attention anymore because, well, the other between fires out west and I want to say real quick, we got a lot of friends out in the on the West Coast who live in Oregon and some in California.
Yeah.
I won't throw out names because there are a bunch of them, but hang in there. If it's as horrible as what I'm reading and seeing, I can't imagine what it's like to see a, you know, 70,000 acre wildfire. I saw some wildfires when I lived in Florida. They burned like around the it was a road called the Beeline. I think it was Route 128, and it ran from Orlando straight to the Atlantic coast. And there was a fire there, and I drove by it like 3 or 4 days later, and everything was burnt. Everything. It was just it was shocking and frightening and whatever. But it was Florida, so it eventually ran into a swamp,
right.
And it stopped and. Oddly, again, being Florida, was pretty green again in about 2 weeks.
Right.
What's happening out west isn't going to bounce back in 2 weeks. I mean, these are trees that are decades or hundreds of years old burning down, and they don't just pop right back up. So,
sorry. Get a lot of rain out there. It's a tough situation. It's scary.
All right. Sorry, I didn't mean to derail, but that's understood. I want that to get, you know,
yeah, we do have a lot of friends. I have a lot of friends that live in California on the West Coast, so definitely I back that up. But. So, you know, I when we put the board together, I wanted to make sure we got the thing with Trump in the Middle East out there because it's a positive and, you know, Trump does a lot where you have to look at him and say, what the fuck are you doing? But I don't want to miss the positive stuff just, you know, just cause I don't want to rail on the guy all the time. Like that's not at least my intention. You know, so I think it's worth it to try to be objective and give him credit where it's due. But, you know, he also, like I said, he does the other things that are aggravating or alienating or, you know, however you want to describe it. And he came out with, you know, a speech really railing against, you know, long story short, I guess, critical race theory and the 1619 Project, which is a project born of the New York Times, where they you know, provide curriculum to schools that gives, you know, the history of the United States through kind of the eyes of slavery, segregation, and its overall impact on the United States. And obviously, you know, your conservatives and, you know, Trump and everyone in that camp thinks that this is terrible. You know, Trump has come out and said, oh, these are lies, and we need what they call the 1776 Commission to come out and, you know, provide patriotic history of American history. And to me, this thing, that is dangerous. And if you're truly a person that says, you know, we need to understand our history so, you know, we don't have to repeat it, you could see where what he's saying here is dangerous because, you know, look, you don't like the New York Times, okay, fine, whatever. You know, teaching kids about the true impacts of slavery and segregation and Jim Crow and, you know, just the absolute terrible things that were born out of it, those aren't lies. That's not black history that you save for 1 month out of the year. That's American history. That's a part of your history. What happened with the Native Americans is part of your history. What happened with Asian Americans during World War II, that's a part of your history. It is part of all of our history.
Sure.
It is American history. And understanding that, if we had a better understanding of that, and if we have been talking about it in real time as it was happening, or we're talking about the real effects of it, then maybe we wouldn't have some of the issues that we have. You wouldn't have this unrest with groups like Black Lives Matter and Antifa. You would, like, things would have played out different if we were talking about our history and we were looking at the problems that, yes, and people, oh, you keep talking about slavery and you keep talking about segregation. Yes, because those things had such a gruesome impact on our country and on people in our country. That yes, we need to keep talking about it because there are things that have been left on the table that haven't been fixed,
right?
That are still impacting us today. And so, last thing, for me, it's absolutely critical that, you know, the various things that have happened over the course of the last and I think over the last year, you know, my starting point usually is Reconstruction. right? Like, I mean, it's just like we've talked about slavery, but we really need to talk about what happened right after the Civil War, what could have been and what actually was, and how, like, how that has impacted where we are today, right? I mean, because I think that when you start to look at the way things went down from the end of the Civil War to Reconstruction to how the South was kind of brought back in, how we pieced things back together, how Jim Crow was born, how segregation was born, why we had to have the Civil Rights movement,
right?
And why did it take so long? And what were the effects from it? And why are we still dealing with issues from it today?
Right.
Right. Then you can understand. Then we can start to fix some of the problems.
And I think I'm not taking a jab at you in any way, but when you say the South, yeah, obviously the South is where slavery was legal and the North wasn't. But a lot of that spilled over to the North, including the city we're in right now.
Right.
And I'm saying I don't...
Yeah. Well, it was more like, I should have said the Confederacy, right? Because the country divided, the Union and the Confederacy. So, but we brought them back in. We brought the Confederacy back into the United States, and we had to piece things back together. So a number of concessions were made, right, to appease the Confederacy once we beat them in the war because, you know, we had just fought a civil war.
Right.
And so how do we bring it back together? And some of it... Some of the concessions that were made were things that had we not made those concessions and we stood on the idea of freedom and everyone actually being equal,
right,
then things probably play out a hell of a lot different in terms of where we are in this country in terms of race and relations and politics and everything else, but they didn't. But it's important that we know it. And so for Trump to say we need a commission that just doesn't talk about that stuff and is totally patriotic... That's dangerous to me.
And I find the word patriotic, not towards you, but offensive, because does patriotic mean supportive of non-minorities? Because that's how a lot of people take it, right? I mean, patriotism should be taking care of your citizenry, which includes the people who are not in the majority.
Well, I think what he's saying is anything that talks bad about our country is something that shouldn't be said as unpatriotic.
Which, by the way, is what dictators do, right?
Yeah, it is. And that's why, like, I you know, people want to talk, oh, he's a fascist and he's an autocrat and he's a... Okay, well, once you start saying we really shouldn't be talking about the bad things in our history and we should only talk about the good things and all the great things that have come from all the great things that we do...
It would be like the Germans...
Right, now, and we have to be careful, right? We have to be careful because here's the thing with Trump and his defenders. Right. What they'll say is the rebuttal to me and you will be, well, he didn't say you couldn't talk about that stuff. He just said we need a line of education that focuses on, you know, all the good things. He didn't say you can't talk about slavery. He didn't say you can't talk about XYZ. What he did say was we should really highlight even more how exceptional and how great the United States is.
Right.
Right. Like and listen, words matter. Phrasing matters. So I'm sensitive to that, which is why I don't want to go on the attack on this like some other people will and automatically say he's saying we have to only talk about X and we can't talk about Y because he's not saying that. Although he does want the 1619 Project banned and, you know, he called it lies.
He's kind of doing what
I understand it, but again, you got to know your opponent, right? Like, you got to know the people that are going to come after you and say, he didn't say that. He didn't say that, right? Like, right. I mean, like, so you got to be careful. And I think we need to be intellectually honest and recognize what he said. But when you break it down, I mean, he's basically saying, listen, I don't want these things talked about in schools. I want these things talked about in schools. And what he wants... does he want lies taught in school? No, but he wants omissions.
And
the problem is we've had that and it didn't fix anything.
We have that. I mean, I grew up with that.
Right. I mean, like we've had all these omissions. I mean, a lot of people your age, like my age and older, there's so many things like, you know, again, like, and we continue to bring up the Tulsa Massacre, but it was such a critical moment in our history, not to mention there's so many other incidents that most of the country doesn't know about, and if you did and you understood this as you were learning history, it would probably reshape how you think about race in general.
It should. And I think the best example is actually Native Americans, because what we learn about Native Americans. Well, we came over from England neither of us had anything to do with England, but whatever.
Right.
You know, and then the Indians were there to help us. We had Thanksgiving together and everything was great. And then...
Right. And then... and then
that pauses.
And then slavery happened, and that wasn't ideal.
And then they helped us fight the French and Indian War. Right. And then...
Right. I mean, it's just...
intentional.
It's... So, no, but you're right. I mean, there's just... there's a lot that is, like, this is something that I think we definitely have to watch for. And this is another reason why I think that should be an important reason to vote, right? Sure. Like, are you comfortable with your president saying things like that, right? Are you comfortable with the idea that your president wants to, you know, is calling, you know, like, because if you go through and you look at some of the curriculum that the 1619 Project, you know, suggests or puts out there that, like, should be taught, these are all things, like, these aren't made up things. These things happen. They're legit. They, right. Like, there's documented evidence of it happening. There's proof. There's people who, you know, over the time, like, who lived it and experienced it. So, president is saying, like, he literally said, these are lies. These aren't lies. This is what fucking happened. So, that to me is a dangerous thing, right? And if you're okay with your president saying that, and you're okay with him saying, we need to get rid of that, we're going to call those lies, and we just need to talk about all the great stuff. If you're okay with that, then fine. But if not, then that's why you need to get off your ass and you need to vote, right? No matter where you are, right? And I don't care if you're in New York, California, or Nebraska, Idaho, wherever.
And the mentality that drives me crazy is if you ever say anything bad about America, you're unpatriotic. Mm-mm. Okay, here's the truth. You know, here's a truthful statement. Oh, it's bullshit. It's real. And if you can't accept reality, you can't fix flaws caused by it or damage caused by it. But there's so many people. I mean, I can't tell you, Steve, and we'll talk about football in a bit, but the number of people I've overheard in bars, and I've stayed out of the conversation because it was not going to go well, where it's like, why do these guys have to wear Black Lives Matter on their warm-ups? They're just making racism worse. I'm like, no, asshole. They're making you think about something that you don't want to think about. And unpleasant as it may be, it was a reality then, it's a reality now, and right now we've had a wave of energy to make things better, and nothing pisses me off more than hearing people talk about rioting is terrible. Why can't you peacefully protest? And how dare you wear a shirt that says something I don't like? I'm like, the ultimate example of a peaceful protest is kneeling, locking arms, wearing emblems on things, and saying, hey, bring attention to this so it doesn't become the violence in the streets that we've seen. And again, this could take us down a total... a rabbit hole that I don't want to go down right now because we have so many important things to talk about and a few unimportant things to talk about, which is what I'm really excited about. but, you know, if you want peaceful protests, anthem kneeling is a peaceful protest as by definition as it can be. Wearing those shirts is by definition a peaceful protest. And if you can't handle that, you are the ultimate example of a whiny snowflake who probably also would say, I should have the right to wave an American flag. Or sorry, Confederate flag. But respect the flag. If you're flying a Confederate flag, you are by definition shitting on the American flag because you are flying the flag that was created to destroy the American flag. Rant over. I'm sorry. Got me on a roll.
Are we talking Barr and slavery?
Yes, we are.
All right. So, you know, Attorney General William Barr, this guy, I mean, he, to me, is just devolving as the Attorney General of the United States. But, you know, as it related to, he was talking about the coronavirus, and he said that the, you know,
the lockdown orders
were the, you know, biggest violation of civil liberties since slavery. Right.
Right.
And
right that he said those words. Not that I agree
right. I mean, and it just, to me, you know, it's embarrassing. Right, you're the Attorney General of the United States, and to make that statement, to say that, you know, like this, and the lockdown order was, you know, think about it. You could go to work, you can go grocery shopping, you know, restaurants need to close, bar, like, yeah. Now listen, people, like,
it sucks. No one denies it sucks.
Right, like there were a ton of people lost money and jobs, and that was awful. And we were looking at a situation where we had this virus. We didn't really have it under control. We didn't know what we were dealing with. And so for the greater good, it's like, listen, let's do this thing where we shut things down for a bit and try to get a hold of it and try to save some lives.
Right.
And And for Barr to flip that and turn it into, you know, it's the worst thing since slavery, I just,
feels like a slap in the face. Like, oh, yeah, really?
So right.
Like wearing a mask and not being able to stand up to 11 is the same as putting people, treating people as property with no rights, no whatever, no recourse for anything. Those are like
beating neck and neck, killing people, right. Raping people, taking people literally from a different continent killing them in the ocean.
My mask makes me have to breathe harder, Steve.
Right. I mean, it's just like, and then it's just like since slavery, we've had Jim Crow, we've had segregation, we interned Asian Americans just because they were Asian. You know, like women didn't have the right to vote. You know, even the way like we've dealt with domestic violence and rape and everything else. So all these things that have happened since slavery, you're going to say that this is worse than all. All right, this thing where people said, all right, we said, listen, you know, to protect other people, why don't you stay in your home where you have access to the internet, you have television, you got food, you got water, you know, you can go out, walk around, you can go, you know, like, I was noticing today how many jack dogs there are in our neighborhood because people were taking their dogs on so many goddamn walks over the course of time, you know, because they couldn't do anything else. You know, the people who live across the street from me, they had two dogs and then they have like two kids. And so mom, dad, and both the kids would take both the dogs out for multiple walks. And I was looking at their Jack Russell. I was like, why is this dog so? And it's like, oh, well, because he went on however many walks for however many miles a day.
Training for the Iditarod.
Exactly. I mean, it's crazy. And then you saw those huskies on my street the one day, right?
I did.
Yeah. I love huskies. I mean, those huskies, those things are like, they're like monsters now.
I didn't know what they looked like before, but
anyway, the idea of what he put out there, you know, and there are going to be people who defend him, right? They're going to say, look what they did. They trounced all over your rights, and there was nothing that you could do about it, blah, blah, blah. Like, look, you know, if you can make that argument, you're just not going to win it, right? And like, listen, people, yes, they were told like, you need to stay in your home, but they didn't have to stay in their home.
They weren't
right?
arrested if they left.
Right. I mean, it's just like there weren't police roaming the streets. Now what that person will do then is there were instances where people were arrested for not wearing masks, right? Like there was a guy who was on a bus, I think in Philadelphia or maybe it was in New York. I can't remember. He was getting on a bus. He didn't have a mask, and the police arrested him. Right, there were plenty of instances where you know, kind of these random instances where a person wasn't wearing a mask, or they weren't socially distancing in public, and police got involved. And I think that goes more to, you know, like what were the police orders like? Right, I mean, did the police even like what was going on here? I mean, and I think there were some civil rights violations because I don't think that the police really had the authority to do it, right? I mean, because like these weren't
an ordinance, not a
right. I mean, it was a guideline. It's not it's not written anywhere. Like, what exactly? So, what's the enforcement ability? So, there are some legit questions there. But to say that right, where a person may have gotten a ticket or a fine or they spent the night in jail or whatever, is as bad or worse than slavery?
Get the fuck out of here. Ballpark, right?
Right, like, and
to quote Samuel Jackson, ain't no ballpark neither.
Right, it's not the same ballpark, not the same sport. Like, none of it, I mean, it's just not relatable.
It's the same fucking sport. Pulp Fiction was on earlier today, sorry, couldn't help myself. All right, man, I want to move on to, I consider this a lighter topic, maybe you'll steer me.
Why don't we end it with this, and then we'll jump back in for a quick sports.
Okay, fine, we'll end with this, that's perfect. So I'm going to let you do the heavy lifting on this because a guy named Jacob Wall and Jack Berkman, who I didn't know a thing about until you sent me an article. I did not know who they were.
Yeah.
And I frankly still don't. Allegedly staged an FBI raid.
Yes.
Ball is in your court, sir. Let's do
this. Okay, so I don't know why they say it's the FBI raid. Like, so starting there, but not to bury the lead. So you've got Jacob Wall and Jack Berkman. Now, Jacob Wall he's a young kid. He's in his mid-20s. Ever since Trump was running, this kid has been all over social media. He's been proven to be a liar and a grifter. I think he's banned from like trading in California. Like he's got a rap sheet with, you know, a lot of fraud, and, you know, getting money, raising money for various charities and money not getting to the charities, and then, you know, making up, you know, making videos with, like, paying girls to say that certain Democratic leaders sexually harassed them or raped them. And, you know, a number of girls have come forward and said, like, yeah, he paid me to say this to this person or whatever. So just a real scumbag, right? And Jack Berkman, same thing. And the question is, like, what the hell were they doing? Because reporters reported on this, right? They, you know, I mean, because they, I mean, these guys, like, they're...
We need to get the... So, they apparently hired a guy to pretend to be an FBI agent.
They hired multiple people. Right.
To pretend to be... And they told them this is part of a movie scene.
Yes.
And then tried to sell it off as a real event.
Yes. And so, reporters, you know, got word and... You know, reported that, you know, this person's house had been raided, and then it comes back like, well, the FBI people were actors and it was set up, and but the guy, these two guys are not answering any questions, and so you can only surmise is that they were going to say that the corrupt FBI
jackbooted thugs, blah, right, blah, blah,
came in, kicked in our doors, arrested us, we got out, we're good, we got out. I mean, what? And it's just like, how stupid are you? Right, like, I mean, you realize that, like, you can verify if a person was arrested by the federal government, right? Like,
Steve,
I mean,
there's so much dumb out there.
Right, I mean, because I think what these guys were going to do was make it seem like the FBI raided them for no reason, and then the reason why they weren't in jail or whatever is because, you know, they had nothing on us and we were good, and this is what the FBI, you know, the FBI
is rogue. They're trying to pin on us, and right, they're rogue. They're anti-Trump, and
exactly.
That's why Mueller and all
exactly.
Those guys.
And then it fell apart before it even came together. So they clearly did not watch enough A-Team growing up, and maybe they're too young for that. But
they were too young for that.
Yeah, I mean, I still watch reruns, man, like with all the streaming, right? Like,
I am the proper age to be an A-Team enthusiast because it came out when I was around 12 or 13. Now, it did have syndication, and I loved it when A Plan Came Together.
Right.
And I even liked the cheesy-ass movie with Bradley Cooper and Liam Neeson and Ray Jackson.
It was fun. I was disappointed they haven't made another one. Maybe they will at some point.
You know what? Of all the films that have gotten sequels, the fact that one hasn't is actually a bit surprising, because there have been much less entertaining movies.
It probably didn't make enough money
for whatever reason. Oh, wait, are you suggesting Hollywood is run by money? Shocking.
I know.
All right, man, let's wrap this up and we'll do a sports bonus to follow.
Yeah.
Sound good?
Yep.
All right, so we are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter. Please follow us. Please like and subscribe to our show. Thank you for listening. We're done.